Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody. We're so excited to be here with Angel Reyes on the SEO Insider. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So look, you came on my radar a ways back as a guy who was doing in Texas similar things that we were doing on the East Coast. So tell me a little about your story. How did you come to be this juggernaut in Texas?
Well, it was a 33-year overnight success, as the joke goes. No, but the firm's been around for 33 years. We started out doing auto and truck cases, representing, injured victims, of course. And, when we first started back in like 93, I want to say, I speak Spanish. And so a lot of our clients were Spanish speaking, and there weren't a lot of lawyers that were meeting that market. And I didn't really know that. And I didn't really know that for the next three decades, there would be an enormous amount of immigration from Spanish speaking countries that were, going to be in Houston and in Dallas and Austin. And so, the firm grew that way first. In fact, I would say until about 1999, 7 out of 10 clients were Spanish speakers.
Wow.
And then slowly but surely, as many of those families, all of a sudden they have kids and those kids have gone through school here. Now it's kind of the opposite. We have about 70% English speakers, 30% Spanish speakers, but that's how we made our bones. And it was a really interesting story. I mean, I was working at a firm that is now Foley and Lardner here in Dallas. It wasn't then, but it is now. One night a cleaning lady came by and asked if I could help her son because she saw my name on the door, it's Angel Reyes. So I was like, yeah, I speak Spanish. She was like, hey, come help me with my son. He's at Baylor Hospital, big hospital here in Dallas. And he's in bad shape, ICU. When I say bad shape, I mean bad shape. And so I naively go back to the law firm I'm working at and say, hey, I'd like to help this person who's been in a bad car wreck. And a couple of the partners looked at me like I had a third eye. And they're like, that AIG and Chubb are some of our biggest clients, right? I'm like, so, I didn't know enough to know back then, right? And I said, man, I'd really like to do this. And I talked to a good friend of mine who was also at that firm. And I said, man, I think this is going to be a case that settles for a lot of money. And he's like, well, we'll see if you can find out. So I made him send me the deck sheet. And it was 300 grand, right? And I figured they owed every bit of it. And so I said to my friend, I said, why don't we quit? And so we resigned. And then like 4 weeks later, we settled the case and took our fee and ran around and tried to find a bank that could open a trust account. And so, that's kind of how we got our start. It was almost 33 years ago. And so that was interesting. And then, of course, we just kept meeting the market. I started doing a lot of TV advertising, Univision. That was kind of nobody did it back then. I was a pioneer in that regard. I think I was spending like 25 grand a month, but the phone was ringing off the hook. We had 150 clients in like 45 days. I mean, it was that crazy. And so, that's how we got started. We've never really looked back. We have been, admittedly distracted. In the late 90s, we got distracted by diet pill litigation, FenFen. And then we got.
I gotta tell you, if you're gonna take a little detour, not a bad one to do.
Yeah, but it ended up really not working out that great for us. We ended up.
With respect, like if you're going to take a flyer, that was not a bad one to take a flyer.
I certainly thought that. And I was young enough to forget some of the lessons that I didn't know some of the lessons I know now. We also got distracted a few times from 2003 to about 2015 by some other mass torts,
We'll get to that in a moment because I want to hear your thoughts on that. But talk about the firm structure itself. How have you built it out? What do you
prefer? Right. So our firm is relatively big now, but it really started. It went from like 70 to 90 people to triple, quadruple that starting in around 2019, and that was, believe it or not, the year I said, I will never do another mass tour. It was the year that I said, I'm only going to do auto and truck. We already had about 300 verdicts by then. 350-ish verdicts in mostly auto and truck cases, a couple of slip and falls, and you know, a couple of like explosive type, workplace stuff where you could actually sue. And I was like, you know, that's what we're good at. Let's just buckle down, focus, and just only do that. And so once we started focusing in 2019 until now, we really got the flywheel going. You know, we read books like Good to Great. You know, there and we did EOS Traction, and that was
when did you start EOS?
In 2019.
Wow.
And
early.
I thought I was late because I actually got to meet Gino Wickman up in Chicago at a conference, and everybody up there acted like that was, man, if you haven't been doing this for a decade, you're way behind. I was like, I better hurry up.
In legal space, you were probably, other than maybe Mike Morris, nobody else was on it at that point.
Well, you know, Mike's got his fireproof, and it's similar. You know,
Gino's his coach.
Yeah, I mean, I read Fireproof recently, and I'm like, oh, it rhymes a lot with EOS, and we were really glad we did it. And by doing that, you know, what does that do for a company? Rigor, measurement, management, meeting cadence. Finding you got to put your rocks up for your quarters. You got to put your goals up for the month, for the quarter, for the year. We have a one page strategic plan that includes all seven of our departments, and every department has a leader. And then those leaders have other managers, and those managers have most of the people downline. So it's structured like a regular company, no different than you would find anywhere else. We happen to have fewer lawyers than most firms this size.
What's your split lawyer versus staff?
Our ratio is it's close to 20 to 1. So we have 20 non-lawyers for every lawyer. The lawyers really kind of stick to, lawyer work, reviewing a petition, filing it, reviewing the discovery after paralegals have kind of finalized it for the most part, doing mediations, doing depositions, attending hearings and trying a case if it gets that far. And so, the rest of the folks do most of the other work. That's just our way of doing it. Not saying it's right. It's definitely a little different than some other firms, but we got to sort of create this. We'd had a firm for a long time that did things a lot like everybody else until about 2019. And for 6 years now, we really tried to change the way we do it. We called it, let's burn the house down and rebuild it, which is essentially what we've done. And, it was, we luckily had a good foundation though. We had, 25 years, 26 years of a foundation. So while we burned the house down, we did not burn the foundation down. We still had a foundation. We still had thousands of auto and truck cases. And so, we just started filing more lawsuits and expecting better results.
That's awesome. Well, quick question, which is first, because I get and appreciate what you did burning down the house by more than you can imagine. First, use international and domestic staff, or is it mostly domestic?
Yeah. No, we do. In Texas, we have about 125 employees. They're mostly in Dallas. I'd say 100-ish are in Dallas. And then we've got about 10 in Fort Worth, which is, it's called Dallas-Fort Worth, but it is 42 miles away. And, it's far enough away that it can support another office. And we have an office in Houston, has a handful of people, an office in Austin, has a handful of people there. But all the lawyers are up here. We're kind of you got to work in the office if you're a lawyer. And that's kind of one of our, we're that company. You got to work in the office.
And staff as well, or staff can have.
So staff in Texas works in the office, but we do have a lot of offshore employees. In fact, I think we have like over 400 offshore employees that do a lot of sort of what I think most people would just say back office work. That goes everything from, gathering records. In Texas, you have to get affidavits, which is kind of another tough step. You can't just submit copies of the medical bills. That's not good enough, especially if you're going to file a lawsuit. and we file, most of our cases get filed, right? So we have to have them in affidavit form. That goes, that means an affidavit for the bill, affidavit for the record, for every single one, for every single case. And that's a big lift. I think we got 70 to 80 people doing that, you know, because that's what it takes for us to stay on pace and to get those records in a timely fashion. We have about three quarters of our what I call sales floor, you know, the folks who are doing new client calls are in a number of other countries, mostly Central America because of the Spanish speaking abilities.
With virtual, or do you have them in a, do you have a location there?
No, we don't have a location there, but they're direct employees.
No, no, I get it, but meaning it's, yeah, I do, yeah, the same thing. It's, no. You have, yeah, contract, I mean, they are, yeah, sitting in their own homes working for, yeah, virtual desktops, yep, et cetera.
Right. Most of them. I mean, there is one spot in Managua, Nicaragua, where I think about 20 people prefer to go. And so we have a teeny little office there. But,
did you build that out yourself? Did you use contractors down there to help you put together BPOs or?
No, we kind of did it. We did it because my COO had worked a couple decades ago at a company that wanted his help to go international. I think he opened close to 30 offices around the world. Wow. And that experience led him to believe that, look, you can get on a lot of these sort of job finding sites for the whole international communities looking at them. And you know, he started that way by getting some resumes. And then we started interviewing people. We started talking to them. And then we went down there. So we went down to Nicaragua. And this is our first like 60, 80 people. And we got really lucky. When we got there, one of the people that had interviewed with us had recently been let go by an insurance company called Gainsco. And as an insurance, I don't, they're probably nationwide, but it's a smallish insurance company. But they were setting up bodily injury and property damage claims in Managua. And he brought 150 people that used to work there. And we decided to hire like 60 of them, like on the spot. And they were all working from home already. And so, you know, you got to do some things with offshore folks. You know, we have ActiveTrack, which gives us some indication that they're there. And we also use Zoom rooms. So for every 10 employees, they're in a team. And they've got a lead, a team lead, we call them. And the team lead has all 10 of them on camera, or, you know, you just don't get paid that day. And so, you know, we don't try to be a super big brother, but we really do try to encourage people to look at the Zoom room as a resource. Like, hey, if you got a question, ask some of the people here. Some of them have been here longer than you. Your lead is right here on top. Ask him or her a question. And we found that to be pretty effective. But, you know, look, can I say, oh yeah, everybody's putting in 8 hours for us? I don't know, but I think most people are pretty. They're giving it a go. They're trying.
Awesome. Sure. No, I tried the Zoom room way back and got, yeah, shot down even before. We've only been international since January 21.
Oh, okay. We
built out a huge international presence. But you said something that struck a chord with me. So, you know, running both Price Benowitz, which just hit 50 lawyers, and Blue Shark, which now has like, you know, over 100 employees and like 300, yeah, clients, you know, national, now international. You know, one of the things that always strikes me is we run EOS in both. We run Fireproof at the law firm, which, uh-huh, is, you know, a version of EOS. Yeah. And we run pure EOS, the marketing company. And, yeah, you know, you go to, and this is true for most friends that have law firms versus marketing companies, other than you who burned down the house and rebuilt it. If you go to the average law firm that's running EOS and you ask, what's your percentage of rocks completed? If they're being honest, yeah, the over-under is probably around 40%.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas, you know, at Blue Shark, at, you know, a young sort of, you know, data-driven business, you have over 80% rocks completed, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, wonder, why can't I have that? And I've always wanted to do what you did, which is eliminate all the legacy nonsense. And, you know, obviously you want to keep the fundamentals of the great lawyers, yeah, but you want to be able to run it more like a business. And I feel like, especially you've done this for three decades, the number of layers of nonsense, if you look at the analogy of James Michener and the Source, where there are layers of things that take place, and you dig down, you see all the bodies that are buried as you dig down in the archaeological dig, that you've basically said, you know what, we're going to keep our foundation here, but we're going to purposefully build up rather than just keep adopting to what we have.
Yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't an easy decision, that's for sure. And not everybody survived it. You know, I mean, a lot of people left. And it was probably for good reason. You know, once we decided that there was going to be a lot of rigor and a lot of meeting cadence, and that we were really going to follow it, slowly but surely people tapped out, you know, they opted out. But the ones that stayed are killing it now. They're in management roles. You know, when you're a growing firm, people have opportunities. You don't get stuck in the same job for 10 years. If you want to move up, just raise your hand and we'll talk to you about it. And if we have an opportunity for you, we'll give it to you. Well, and so we think that's really helped the dynamism of the workforce here.
Well, you also something that it's sort of like this is a beast, right? You know, with the number of hundreds and hundreds of people there. And I something Jay and I talk about on our sister podcast, the Law Firm Blueprint, which is okay. You know, it's one thing to sort of start a firm. It's another to have get to a point where you have, you know, managers and you have people under them. But the scary part is when you have mid-level managers that are, you're no longer touching the manager, but touches a person. And now you have multiple layers of mid-level management.
That's true.
Because if you take the attitude, I've come to the conclusion that anything over 8 direct reports kidding yourself? You can go to 10, but like...
We're kind of at 10, but yeah.
Right, but that means employing 9 and 10 don't really get that much love. It's like the third child or fourth child. You can only do so much. You got the first two, then we got a third. Yeah. You know, and so, you know, when I look at that and I think about the permutations, the good news is you automatically get opportunity because you need people. It's, you know... It's not like you can just say, here's 100 people. You're like, no, here's a pot of 10. Who's managing them? And who's then, you know, training that manager?
Right.
And then who's managing the manager? And like all of a sudden, you know, and that's why when you look at the expensive stuff, you're like, you know, very often firms like ours look at like low dollar PI. And there's a reason you want it, because the person who has the smallest possible case could come back with the giant case.
Yeah.
But every employee you add brings risk and further permutations. I mean, you have a 500th worst employee, right? That boggles the mind.
Somebody's right there.
Right? You have 100th worst pre-lit paralegal. Like, and with each of those, you're, you know, and Chad Dudley, one of my favorite guys in the space, you know, always says, you know, at some point in that organization, something's being screwed up on any given day. And Angel, have to be like, and I'm okay with that. Not that you don't want that, not that you want it fixed, but you wouldn't be more than like a 2-lawyer shop if you weren't able to sort of conceptualize, put the systems in place. You know, small shops have issues too. It's not like they're perfect.
Oh, yeah.
One person has an issue. So what's really fascinating is, what lessons have you learned as you sort of created this? Because it's not like you have like hundreds and hundreds of people without thought. The org chart must be a work of like a Picasso.
Oh, it's to put it on a board, it'd be a pretty good sized board. One of the things that, that we also do is, you know, like you said, like who's managing the managers? We have group managers, all right? And the group managers will have 5 folks if it's pre-lit or litigation paralegals or even the lawyers have a group attorney manager. And there's 5 or 6 lawyers for 1 attorney group manager. And their job is just to kind of help the lawyers, you know, get unstuck sometimes, meet their goals, help them meet their goals, you know, tell them when they're not, tell them when they are. And that goes across the entire org. So, you know, our firm is structured that way so that, you know, the people training are not the people managing, and the people managing have managers above them. And because we really took that whole KPI part of EOS like super seriously. I mean, it's still to this day, we're still refining it. I mean, we happen to use a database Lytify that's built on Salesforce, and it's very robust. I mean, you can do an awful lot of reporting and dashboards and other tools to help the folks that you've got helping you manage the people that are underneath them that you may not ever touch. You may not even hear about. But if you put in enough of those measurable activities, we know that activity gets that is really what we're looking for to move cases and get things done. And so when those triggers get hit, then we generally know things are rocking along. And so look, you can't be a control freak. Now, if you're a control freak, you're in trouble. You've got to believe that the people that you've empowered are going to do the best they can.
So I'm gonna pivot for a moment. We met during the marketing track at a number of these conferences, and I personally, again, seem late to the game compared to you on a lot of this stuff. We got to EOS later. We were digital only for years, grew to almost 50
Yeah,
lawyers, digital
we
only.
haven't.
And then over time, added in Spanish TV, added in radio. Talk to me a little bit about your journey and what the path was as far as building out media. And to me, I came to the realization that it was the combination of some of these medias that really ended up paying dividends, whereas for years loved the ROI of digital and sort of got intoxicated by that. I want to get hear about your journey.
Well, early on, until at least 2016, it was mostly broadcast media. I think we were spending, I don't know, 20 million a year on broadcast media. We were in a couple markets in Austin and in Dallas.
Mostly Spanish media or everything?
No, everything, English, Spanish, you name it. By then, there were so many bilingual people. And if you're bilingual, you generally are going to be watching English TV. The Spanish TV is really for people that just can't watch something in English. It's an acquired taste in my personal opinion. Spanish TV, it's kind of soap opery, but there's other cool stuff. It's not like that's all there is, but we started that way. We started with it was 90% broadcast media, and then in 2016. Or actually, about 2014, we started laying off some of the budget on Google, and we started. I think maybe what you we saw what maybe you saw, and that was ROI on digital was smoking, broadcast TV, and so by 2016, I started really moving big pieces of the budget. We were by 2016, we were 75-25 digital, 75 digital, and then in 2021, I ran my last television campaign, and we've been only digital since then. But our digital pro, you know, our digital channels include, obviously paid LSA, SEO. We don't forget that. That's part of that foundation, if you will. We experiment with YouTube, all the other social media properties. Some are better than others. At least, we haven't completely cracked the code on each of them, but we're still doing each of them. But the majority of the money is Google and LSA. That's where we spend the majority of our paid search money. But you know what? We also, we get cases from other lawyers. We get cases from clinics. We get about 100 cases a month from former clients or friends. People that kind of just know us, and they don't. All they do is Google us and call us, and they haven't. They already knew about us. They had an
Right.
introduction
And
to us.
I think that's where the intersection where I've sort of I have not grown up, but where I see that the advantage of the digital goes beyond just people that have never heard of you. That was always my look, built an
Yeah.
agency and built a firm, but that when you have those other tentacles, even if it's experimenting on social, even if
Yep.
it's billboards, even if it's happy clients, we think a lot of ourselves. But when
Yeah.
somebody leaves us 2 years later, they may not remember the name of their lawyer. And that when they go to do a search, they're like, oh, yes, that's it. And I feel like that's almost as I look at the value of radio or TV today, very few people are listening with a call to actions. Oh, I'm going to call right now versus it sits in the noggin and then goes into the ether. And part of the reason I think when I see some of the major players that are even upstream for me, like a Morgan, that they've been like, look, we're just going to be everywhere. And when some people want to, some people don't, but the brand becomes ubiquitous. And while we think a lot of our brand, some people remember it. And some people, it's sort of like in that ether that then gets brought to the surface the moment they see it in a search.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things, we're doing some programmatic stuff. And really what that is that's, it's not really tippity top of the funnel, advertising funnel, but it's sort of, it's higher than we normally do. We really like to focus on what we call high intent. I mean, we would love, you know, our ads to only be seen by people that are seriously in the market to hire an injury lawyer. You know, they had a crash yesterday or 3 days ago or whatever, or their son or daughter or mother or father or whatever, you know, has been in an unfortunate situation. We love high intent, right? But we also recognize that some of the programmatic stuff that we're doing across, or some of it's across social, and a lot of it's across YouTube. I mean, we're for not a lot of money, we're getting 4 or 5 million impressions. And so for us, you know, that is kind of how we want to percolate at that level. Because, man, Seth, I just don't think people are watching broadcast TV, man. I don't know. I don't remember the last time I did. And by the way, next year, the one thing that we all watch broadcast TV, well, we don't all, but most of us, and I suspect you, Seth, watch a football or a NBA game or the World Series, right? Sports. Did you, maybe you already know this. Next year will be the first time you can watch any NFL game and you don't have to use broadcast TV to find it and watch it. It'll be the first year ever. And so what that tells me is that broadcast and cable is being totally disintermediated, right? People are going straight to the people that the media companies are going straight to the folks who want to see it. And they're streaming it to them. And I got to tell you, if you're under 40 and you still have cable, I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked. I mean, I just would be. Nobody I know under 40 has it, right?
And so my over 40 compromises YouTube TV, which most people are not spending the $80 on. They're hodgepodging it with other apps, which you could do.
Yep. You can.
Too lazy, but when you look at it, you know, I'm looking at this stuff along those lines. Everybody in the media space, because all the broadcast players, local TV, are trying to sell, even radio, are trying to sell the, whether it's OTT or some sort of programmatic piece where they theoretically are getting big data to let you know when there's that search intent.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm cynical. But like, it's the only piece that's sort of interesting. At the same time, I just, look, these are the same guys I don't trust on anything else. Want to get your thoughts. Have you seen anybody who's bringing that together? That getting the intent in some sort of targeted fashion as opposed to just brand.
So, you know, you can get pitched on OTT by Prime, Amazon.
Everybody.
By many, not just streaming apps, but, you know, they can also do, their agencies that do a comprehensive, you know, streaming OTT, you know, program for you, right? We tried it a few years ago. It wasn't successful. You know,
I get that, but I'm going one step further. They're trying to say now it's not just buying eyeballs I was shocked. They're allegedly are now in the business of targeting people who have been injured at the same CPM as just buying general OTT. And I'm
I would have to see the proof.
Exactly. And we're heading in that direction. Into the point where, like, as more and more data, look, we both know that if my wife searches for something, I get the ads now. Everything's getting tied together.
So let me ask you this, Seth. Like, you know, our experience, Seth, is that when somebody, you know, hits one of our paid ads or finds us, you know, and they call us, you know, we close those. If we like the case, our close rate's like 85 or better, man. Right.
And normally people exaggerate. You know, we've had days we're hitting low 90s. You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we also had days in
No,
the
no, no,
hot
no, no.
seat.
I'm being. I'm just trying to say is like you're usually everybody always overestimates. I'm saying like I believe you.
So what that suggests to me, and I'm open. I'm always all ears about these things. But what that suggests to me is that, if somebody with high intent gets on a search and finds you and you talk to them, it's unlikely that an ad or whatever is going to then later get them to call you back. You either close them on the first call or your shot's like 20% after that.
You know, I think that that's a to me a little. Oh, you're saying 85% of first time callers close on the phone.
Yeah, and so how would an ad
No, no,
later,
no. Right. So,
targeting their
okay. So
search help?
some people argue that our growth in market is people that aren't hiring a lawyer. They speak to somebody but don't hire for whatever reason. How could they possibly do that? Whereas, like, there are people that don't that take an offer from the insurance company. That's one
Yeah, that's
potential
true.
bucket.
No, that's true. It
You know, it's a very
happens.
large, statistically, it's a huge bucket, right? It's not like
Yeah.
everybody hires a lawyer. We think a lot of
No.
ourselves, but the rest of the world doesn't. I'm
Yeah.
always amazed at how many people are, it's a decision. Like,
Yeah.
and look, I remember, you know, I'll give you an example. This is not, you know, my mom, in New York, was at a museum, fell on a step very badly and injured an arm. And there was a hazard. And she was like, yeah, I got, you know, my insurance is covering it. I'm good. So, like, you
Right.
know, again, that's not, I don't take it from a sample of one, but my point is there are the ones that are going to be instantaneous. So, right. And that's where I'm cynical as to whether or not if they're pulling stuff out and you already got them, yeah, respect, it's not going
Yeah,
to happen.
you
But
know.
are there people out there, just like you would see for like immigration or family? Great example. Those do family law. Right? Somebody's gonna wake up one day and says, I'm getting divorced today. I'm done. Versus they've thought about it for a year. There's
Yeah.
good days, there are bad days. They may have
Yeah.
done search, experiment. So if you're able to, part of the reason they don't let us do the retargeted family, but the point
Yeah.
is that if there is an inkling that somebody is in the market, that's always a you know, so anyway, I'm fascinated. To me, the fundamentals are search. It's the multi-offices, it's the LSAs, it's getting the
Yeah.
reviews, it's building up the organic domain authority. To me,
Yep.
that's what built my firm. I wouldn't have 50 lawyers but for that.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so to me, everything else I can play with on top,
Right.
and I say play, it is play. As
Yeah,
long as I
you're
have my
experimenting.
fundamentals locked in, that's what's been what built me and our clients at Blue
Yeah.
Shark is like get the fundamentals right, everything else will fall in place.
Everything else will fall. Well, we feel the same way. I try not to be too cynical, but with OTT, we didn't have a great experience. That was a few years ago. Maybe it's gotten better. I'd be open to hearing about it again.
But
But
isn't that like everything else? Like if for the last 10 years, how many people pitched you geofencing of the emergency room?
yeah,
If you
right.
had invested in each of those people over 10 years, you'd have nothing to show for it. You'd have
You'd
zero ROI, right?
be
I know
broke.
that there's finally some possible, yes, you could do some stuff, maybe, you know, that people get some results. But for 10 years, I sort of feel like OTT similarly, that they're
Yeah.
figuring out what works and what doesn't work, and that everybody who's done OTT up to the present know, and they're trying to basically say, hey, we're getting better data. Well, that works. So maybe I'll be the guy who loses my money this time to tell you
Right,
it's not
right, right.
quite there yet. But I
Yeah.
have no doubt they got to figure it out because
Yeah.
you're not, if every eyeball is there and that's where the attention is, it's not like that it's non-convertible. The question is, what's the right price for it?
Right.
Meaning we started out, when you started out, there were probably three, five networks you were dealing with.
Oh,
And so now with streaming,
three.
it's infinite and the
Yeah.
pricing has got to adjust accordingly, as well as the attention. You know, old school, we were sat on a couch and unless your father hit you to get up to go change the channel, it wouldn't get
Yeah.
changed.
I
Like
know.
it's now my kids don't stand something for 10 seconds without a swipe. So
Right. That's exactly right. And so, I don't know. Look, OTT is attempting to, get advertisers. No different than, the broadcast folks used to 20, 30 years ago. Their sort of selling proposition is we're going to, our that's where everyone's going, so you better get there. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure that's really the strategy we're going to take. But we're definitely going to continue to do the same kind of digital strategies you're doing. I mean, that's what's getting us here.
So as we wrap up here, what excites you? What tips or tricks would you give to our audience? And what do you sort of like, what do you see next?
Well, next, a couple things. First, let me give a tip. The tip, and you know, I already told you a little bit about my story. The tip is, if you're, I believe that you should find a niche and really focus and stick with it. Don't get distracted. I personally am guilty. I got distracted 3 or 4 times over the last 30 years, and I don't regret it, but I learned from it. And boy, since 2019, just focusing on auto and truck has made all the difference. So that's one tip I would give to any lawyer out there, that you know, you can't do everything. And if you are, you're probably not doing any of it very well. So do something and do it well. That'd be my tip. I see 20 more years of our practice, auto and truck. And that's more than most. And the reason I see that is that, as with most things, let's say self-driving cars, let's say, you know, Uber, Lyft, and all of a sudden, you know, flying mini helicopters to get you places. Things happen real slow, 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 slow. And then all at once, you're like, whoa, where'd this come from? I think that's 20 years away. I mean, I think the cars on the road right now are going to stay on the road for 10, 20 more years. I mean, you know, I just do. And so I'm not afraid of the auto and truck world. And as far as, like, you know, new towards, I'm going to keep focusing on my auto truck stuff. I don't want to get distracted by a
Probably
shiny
enough for you to
object.
run, to have your run in, right? You can finish
Yeah,
your run.
I've already done it, and I want
Your
to do it
younger
again.
partners that are rising up, that'll
You
be
know,
awesome.
if they can figure it out, then I'm all for it, you know. But until then, I think I'm just going to stay in my lane, and we're going to continue to do good work, and we're going to maximize our clients' recoveries. And you know, that takes hard work. It takes filing a lawsuit most of the time in Texas.
Well, look,
It
thank you
does.
so much for your time. I really
Very
appreciate it.
welcome.
Can't
Yeah,
wait till we
I'll
share a
see you
stage
soon.
again.
Oh, I'm going to see you soon. I know it. I'll probably early summer, maybe.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for your
All
time.
right. Take care,
Appreciate it.
man. See ya.
Bye. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.